The mobile app. This show furnished by Girardi Keys.
Hello, I'm Dave Dino, and this is Champions of Justice. This is the program that takes you behind the scenes with those who make the laws and those who protect your rights through the rule of law. Your hosts are attorney Thomas Girardi and attorney James O'Callaghan. Tom Girardi is the founding partner of the law firm of Girardi & Keys, known for passionate litigation of corporate giants on behalf of aggrieved individuals. He is a member of the California State Bar Trial Lawyer Hall of Fame and is widely regarded by his peers as one of the nation's top trial lawyers. Jim O'Callaghan is a member of Girardi & Keys, who has tried over 30 jury trials in both state and federal court, and since 1995 has served as an arbitrator and mediator for the Los Angeles County Court's Alternate Dispute Panel. Tom and Jim are champions of justice for the little guy. Each week we bring you this informative and entertaining hour, bringing clarity to the headline-generating legal challenges of the day. And I pause before the word entertaining because today is going to be truly very entertaining. Our guest is Michael Asimo. He is the editor of the book Lawyers in Your Living Room. The book contains 7 divided parts that cover numerous aspects of legal television, domestic and foreign, civil and criminal. It contains essays about many dramatic lawyer shows of the past and present, contains chapters on TV shows not primarily devoted to law, but in which lawyers played important roles, such as The West Wing. The book includes a set of articles about the law on TV genre, including discussions about writing and furnishing technical advice for TV. The book further covers the Judge Judy phenomenon. It contains a sense of the richness and vigor of legal television, past and present, foreign and domestic. Michael co-authored Real Justice, The Courtroom Goes to the Movies, 2006, a book about the great courtroom movies of the past and present. And we've got an interesting list of those as well. He has also written Law and Popular Culture, A Course Book, 2004, co-authored a course book on administrative law, State and Federal Administrative Law, 3rd edition, 2008, as well as California Administrative Law, 2002. He has also written numerous articles on state and federal administrative law, as well as comparative administration law, focusing on the European Union and South Africa. He's also published articles on lawyers, law firms, and legal ethics in the movies. Michael teaches contracts, administrative law, and law and popular culture at UCLA. He has received both the university's Distinguished Teaching Award and the School of Law's Rutter Award for Excellence in Teaching. He is the past chair of the American Bar Association section on administrative law and regulatory practice. And Tom, I underlined something in the introduction. He has also published articles on lawyers. We're really going to have to watch ourselves today. Tom?
Hi, everybody. Hey, thanks for coming. And, you know, I think you're going to like this. Dave Dino, we've had some real smart guys on this show.
Yeah,
okay?
We've
had these justices and all that stuff. Well, we finally got the real smart guy, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you on this one. You know, he's a, in talking to the some of the people at UCLA, some of the professors there, he's considered the smartest guy in the room. And I mean that, I'm telling you the truth on this, Michael. I'm not kidding you. And not only that, when you start talking to his students, it's an energy that is different from any other class they take. Be it something somewhat boring like contracts, that Jim, maybe you can address later, or something not as boring as some of the other courses, he's on top of his game and makes everything interesting. And the insight of this person to then start saying, okay, why don't we look at how television, let's look at the movies of how they've portrayed lawyers and the effect, quite honestly, on the legal system. And he did it. This is a masterful book that I read, that Jim read, which goes into a whole bunch of the lawyers on television. And indeed, you can't really understand this unless you're a lawyer.
You know, you say masterful, and that might scare a few people into thinking that this is a very serious work, and it definitely has its serious aspects, but it's highly entertaining as well.
Oh, no, it's terrific. It really is. And let me tell you something, Professor. It was nice of you to find some time to come and share with us. The things that you have done are amazing. I'm not kidding you on this. I mean this from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
I know Dave Dino a little bit about some of the 25 greatest movies because we sat around one night with a bunch of lawyers. Matter of fact, they were in the inner circle with me. And we said, okay, how do you persuade? And we came to the conclusion that there were only like five or six ways that you persuade. And we wrote them down. And then we tried to find movie clips that mirrored that so that we could demonstrate for sure the ways to persuade. And one of the ways to persuade, which is one of these 25 greatest legal movies, was in the area of total knowledge of the subject matter. And all you had to do is to see my cousin Vinny, and she's on the stand, and she's a hostile witness. She doesn't want to be there, but man, she knows her stuff. And knowing her stuff was totally persuasive. Another way to persuade is a soft sell. Dave Dino, you know, as a lawyer, you don't want to call some witness or some defendant a liar. You want to say things like, you know, he must have been mistaken. You want the jury to go in the jury room and say, mistaken baloney, this guy's a liar. And so the way to persuade maybe sometimes is being a soft sell. And lo and behold, in the movie with Henry Fonda with the 12 jurors, where he then...
12 angry men.
12 angry men. Mm-hmm. He then is very persuasive in that jury room, keeping his powder dry until he pulls out the identical knife that was supposed to be so... And then you have ways to persuade of a total belief in a client. Clearly, To Kill a Mockingbird, the lawyer there had a total belief in his client. Didn't win the case, but it was a great movie for lawyers to watch forever. Then there's a total commitment to principle. The best movie for this, Michael, was A Few Good Men, in which both people, Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, were totally devoted to principle. They had different principles in mind. But did you order the code red sooner or later? Yes, you know, I goddamn right I did, you know. So those are ways to persuade. And then when you look at practicing law in real life, those same things are really true. Anyway, for you to have captured, and I didn't mean to take quite so long because I want to get to your comments more than mine, but for you to have captured all of this, looking at all of these television segments, starting with Perry Mason, et cetera, is really interesting.
Well, thanks, Tom. I think that legal television shows going all the way back to the late 50s and right up to the present have been an ever-popular genre on television. I mean, enormous millions of fans have learned what lawyers are like, what the justice system is like, from watching television. And it's just as powerful today as it ever was.
That is the voice of our guest, author and UCLA professor, Michael Asimow. You are listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan. I'm Dave Dino, and we'll be back with more right after this on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
What's the frequency?
790.
And the letters?
KABC.
The Pasadena Playhouse presents The Originalist, a powerful portrayal of passionate people risking heart and soul to defend their interpretation of the truth and the Constitution. Performances begin April 11th through May 7th. For tickets, visit PasadenaPlayhouse.org.
Whether you want breakfast for dinner or dinner for lunch, get any meal anytime at Norm's.
Our bigger, better breakfast is only $6.79. Hickory smoked bacon, link sausage, ham, eggs, hash browns, and buttermilk hotcakes served 24/7.
Or get your feast on with Norm's New York Steak and Shrimp Dinner served all day and night. Hand-cut steak, golden fried shrimp, vegetable, potato, soup, and salad, all for $11.99. Come into Norm's restaurants and eat what you want, when you want. Open 24/7. Normsrestaurants.com.
News, talk, evolve. Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Why won't a plumber just tell me what it costs to unclog my drain over the phone? Is it that complicated?
No, it's not. It makes no sense at all. They obviously have a price.
Whoa, you've got a nice aroma. Who are you?
Mike Diamond, the smell good plumber.
Will you tell me how much to unstop my drain?
$99.
But you haven't seen it.
Don't need to. Doesn't matter if it's a kitchen sink or a mainline sewer stoppage. The Smell Good Plumbers at Mike Diamond will unclog almost any drain for $99.
Almost?
Yeah, there are a few exceptions, but you can read all about them on our website before you call. Just go to thesmellgoodplumber.com.
Wow, you're like up front and everything. I just called a guy named Bubba who wouldn't tell me anything.
No Bubba's here, ma'am. Just professional plumbers who show up on time, smell good, and unclog drains for $99.
Call us, 1-800-446-MIKE. Contractor license number 399170.
We here at Sam Nation try to tell you what you're missing. You've got to get your fill of sanity and reason, and this is your place for it.
Get your daily dose of sanity with Sam Nation, Monday through Friday, 7 to 8 p.m. on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Beep, beep,
beep, beep. Coming up on the next drive home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips, we'll tell you if more bombs are flying in Syria.
And the great LT, no, not Lawrence Taylor, Leo Terrell is going to stop by this week.
Live and local right after Dr. Drew and Mike Hathaway right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan, our guest today, author of the book Lawyers in Your Living Room, Law on Television, Michael Asimow. Tom?
Okay, so I'm going to start with Perry Mason, because the only reason I'm a lawyer was Perry Mason. Perry Mason was on Saturday night at 7 o'clock. I was in the sixth grade. You'd watch Perry from 7 until 7:30. And Perry had a terrific one-loss record, without a doubt. On the other hand, Michael, I'll tell you something that we did, because this was so influential to me to become a lawyer. I wanted to be a lawyer in the sixth grade after watching Perry. As time went on, we decided as a lawyer a few years ago to go back and look at some of Perry's work. And quite honestly, I had a bunch of good lawyers, Dave Dino, around me, and we watched these film clips of Perry. And quite honestly, Perry was a real lousy lawyer. He had no clue as to the case. And but for Paul Drake at about 7:20 of the 30-minute show, walking in with a surprise witness that, you know, did everything upside down, mm-hmm. Perry would have been, instead of 100-0, would have been 0-100. Mm-hmm. So a close analysis of Perry maybe wasn't that he was not necessarily a good lawyer, but he was a very gentle lawyer, something that's missing in the profession. Do you agree with me, Michael, or not?
Well, I think Perry Mason, along with Paul Drake, was a great investigator. So he always was, every one of his clients, every one in about 250 television shows, not to mention countless movies and radio shows and Earl Stanley Gardner's books as well, his client was always innocent. He never seemed to care about making money or anything else about practicing law. He just represented clients that were always innocent. And they were always prosecuted, though. The prosecutor and the police were always had the wrong guy every single time. And Perry always got them off, as you say, just at the very end by pulling the surprise witness out of the hat or breaking them down on cross-examination. So, you know, in the terms of this show, he was the greatest of all champions of justice because his clients were always innocent and he always got them off. But, of course, okay, to us today, it seems like a painful cliche.
You know what, though? That's pretty good. They were. He never got a guilty guy off. He always got the innocent guy off. And Dave Dino, it always looked like the innocent guy was the guy, right?
Right. The police and prosecutor always had the wrong guy.
Now, you've actually gone back to some of the old Perry Mason movies and film clips, right?
Right, right.
And do you have any that you could share with us now?
Yeah, I have one here. It's entirely typical. If you see this one or any other one, you've seen them all. But here you have the witness. The wrong guy has been prosecuted, as usual, but Perry breaks down this witness on the stand, just as he always does.
Dave Dino, let's hear it.
That you own a house trailer, is that true, Mr. Beckmeyer?
Yes.
Was the late Edward Davenport ever in that trailer?
No, never.
If an expert were to produce fingerprints, Davenport's fingerprints, from the inside of that trailer, would you swear on your oath that they were forgeries?
Well, he might have been in there once. I don't remember for sure.
Mr. Beckmeyer, isn't it a fact that Davenport was in your trailer on the day he died?
Well, no.
Then where did he get the bacon and eggs? In that trailer.
It's a lie.
And where did he get the liquor? None was found in his room. You gave it to him, did you not? Generously spiked with arsenic?
I tell you, you're wrong.
Then answer this, Mr. Beckmeyer. If you did not kill Davenport, why did you dig that grave 2 days in advance?
I didn't.
What other reason could you have for buying a shovel from the Clary Hardware store on that very same day?
Well, the chump was asking for it. He never got tired of telling me how smart he was. He was going to disappear and leave his wife holding the bag. Everybody would wonder what happened to the body. It was such a great plan, I figured with a little help from me, it'd be perfect. Guess I was wrong, too.
Wow. He got his man again.
Never
you
fails.
Know, did he ever lose? You know, I looked at a bunch of these because I wanted to do a long time ago an analysis of Perry, and I didn't see any shows that he actually lost.
I have heard, I have never seen any that he lost either. Someone has told me there was one case that he lost in his whole long career, but I have never seen it. And in general, his win-loss record is as close to perfect as it can possibly be.
I like Earl Stanley Gardner's sense of humor. If you notice, the prosecutor in most of Perry Mason is Hamilton Burger,
right? Hamilton Burger, right.
Ham Burger.
Yeah, right. That's Earl Stanley Gardner's sense of humor.
Yeah.
Right. No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay, so a little bit more about you. We're going to go to some of your work in a second. How did you get this way?
Well, I always loved television and the movies. I also became a lawyer because of pop culture, although to me it was the movie To Kill a Mockingbird. But I was a great fan of Perry Mason and a show I hope we'll have another chance to talk about later, The Defenders, which was on actually on the same network as Perry Mason and on the same night, which I regard as the finest legal show ever.
E.G. Marshall, baby.
E.G. Marshall and Robert Reed, exactly.
Right.
So I love television and I love old movies. And through a colleague, I realized that no one had ever written about them. There are books on every form, every genre of film and television, vampire movies and porno movies and everything you could imagine. But no one had ever written about lawyer movies or lawyer television. So I did write a book about the famous courtroom movies with my colleague Paul Bergman. We really had a lot of fun with that. That's called Real Justice, about all the great courtroom movies. And then I moved on to television with this book. In this case, I have a lot of co-authors. I couldn't do it all myself. But numerous co-authors, I got them all together, and they chose their favorite television show of the past, and they wrote on it. But I teach law and pop culture. I have a seminar on the subject. And I really think it's tremendously important subject for law students to study and for all of us to think about.
What's the name of the book?
The teaching book is called Law and Pop Culture, a course book. And that's intended for people to teach courses on this, both in law school and in undergraduate, where you actually look at movies and about a particular problem, say about bad lawyers or about the death penalty, and then you see how it's portrayed in pop culture and then how it really is.
We're going to get to Jim in just a second, but I want to follow up on that. And you said it's a very important book for students, law students, to read. Why?
Well, I think that law students need to know how lawyers are shown in the media. Lawyers have been shown in movies ever since the 1930s, countless movies, and in television shows ever since the late 50s and 60s down to the present. And in the general public, most of what people know or think they know about law and lawyers is derived from pop culture. And I can give you lots of examples of that if you want to talk about it. And so lawyers need to know that. Your jurors have learned about law from watching television, and you better know that.
You go back to Shakespeare, the lawyer's name was Shyster.
Absolutely. In Shakespeare, they said that the first thing we do is kill all the lawyers. That was sort of the earliest anti-lawyer comment, and of course, there's been a lot of it since then.
Lawyers, though, have brought a lot of this on themselves, Michael.
Well, I think there's no question about that. Right now, it's sad to say, I hate to say it, but lawyers are the most hated and distrusted of all professions in America.
I thought it was congressmen.
No, they're fighting for the bottom spot, and used car dealers come in a little below. But as far as professions are concerned, lawyers are by far the lowest. That wasn't always true. Up until the 1970s, lawyers were in the middle of the pack. They were respected, not loved. But something happened around the mid-70s to early 80s that caused lawyers to fall to the bottom. And every poll that you look at will show you the same thing. They're at the very bottom. You get maybe only 15% of the people think lawyers can be trusted. And that wasn't true in the past.
And you know what? Deservedly so. You know, the civility in the profession has taken massive hits.
I think that's certainly a factor. And I think there are numerous other factors besides that. The meanness of lawyers, the difficulties of litigation, and all that is a factor. But you have Watergate in there around the mid-70s. Oh, that was all lawyers. And my personal choice for the biggest reason why lawyers have taken such a big hit is television advertising by lawyers.
Television advertising by lawyers?
That went from zero. That didn't exist until 1978. Mm-hmm. When the U.S. Supreme Court held it was protected by the First Amendment. So since then, it's gotten to be a huge industry. And on television, you see lawyers saying, you know, beat your DUI, fake a whiplash.
Whatever.
Get out from your debts. I think this is a major factor.
At this point, we're going to pause as you listen to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan, our guest today, author and UCLA professor Michael Asimow. He is the author of Lawyers in Your Living Room, Law on Television. I'm Dave Dino, and we'll be back with more right after this on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Source for breaking news, live and local, KABC.
As a 300-foot-tall dino monster, people think all I'm good at is rampaging. But there's more to me than that. Just like Geico. Yeah, they could save you money, but they also have over 75 years of savings and service. So Geico is super good at insurance. And yeah, I like rampaging. But I'm also a huge fan of opera.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
It's Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot, where right now, 4 bags of EarthGrow colored mulch are just $10. It helps retain ground moisture and protects your plants, keeping its rich color for up to 12 months. In shades of red, brown, or black, that'll really set off your garden or spring from the ground up. Get Spring Black Friday prices on EarthGrow colored mulch. Right now, 4 bags for just $10. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid April 6th through April 9th. While supplies last, limit 60 per customer.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
The standard run-of-the-mill tests and treatments.
Cortisone.
Antihistamine.
Multiple creams.
Antibiotic spray.
Multiple prescriptions.
Steroid injections.
Topical spray.
The sharp antibiotics.
Steroid cream.
No results.
It was neglect. The other owners didn't care enough about him to take care of him and to give him the nutrition he needed.
A nutritional supplement like Dynavite.
To be the healthy, happy dog he is today.
DINOVITE.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Put some nutrition in your dog. The vet that I trust recommended Dynavite. The dog I have today, because of Dynavite, has a sparkle in his eye, a lush coat, healthy skin.
When you rescue a dog, you've got to feed them right for life.
Dynavite will make your dog a happy dog.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Talk Radio
7790
the ABC.
We're back with more of Champions of Justice, a very entertaining show today because we're talking about lawyers in your living room, law on television. That is the title of the book. The author is Michael Asimo. Your hosts are Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan. Tom, there was an interesting survey taken of the top 25 legal shows on TV, but they surveyed lawyers, okay? And the list put Ally McBeal as number 6. Well, I'm looking at the picture, and I can see why.
Yes. No, she's looking good.
Yeah.
Well, Ally McBeal was a show that really appealed to young women, and it was a David Kelly show. It was set in a law firm, but it could have been set in any kind of professional practice. It's just that Kelly knew more about law firms. It had less to do with law, but a lot to do with the lead character's fantasies of all sorts and her messed up personal life and those of the other people at the law firm. It wasn't my favorite. It was too crazy for me. I like law shows that really deal seriously with important legal subjects and problems of clients.
You know what, though, Michael? It gave women the idea that they can be in the law practice.
Oh, absolutely. That's true.
And, you know, I went to law school, David, and there were two women in my class. Now, at Loyola Law School, more than half of the class are women. Mm. You know, it gives you some idea. And this is prevalent now all over the country.
And it's prevalent on television.
But before, this was a boy's game, man. I mean, you wouldn't think.
No doubt about it.
You wouldn't think of being a lawyer if you were a woman because, you had no... There was no play. No law firm would hire you. You weren't involved.
No respect.
No respect. Exactly.
That's right. It was considered a man's profession.
Well, Sandra Day O'Connor could only get a job as a legal secretary.
That's correct.
That's right.
Wow.
Oh, that's a true story, isn't it, John?
That's right.
Okay. On Sunday, Dave Dino, Erica and I watched 2 hours, 4 sessions of Snapped. Have you seen that?
Of Snapped?
These are the real stories of cases that are going through the courts.
I've not.
Phenomenal. And they have some of the testimony and some of the judges and some of the jurors and things like that. I mean, pretty good. It's on one of the channels which isn't too frequently watched.
You know, you talk about real courtroom drama on TV, and you've talked about the various shows over the years and how it shaped the public's opinion of lawyers and what the public understands or misunderstands about the law. Go back to the OJ trial. What do you think that did to the public's understanding of the law and of lawyers?
No question that was a huge negative. People still refer to the OJ Simpson case today as being a great black eye for the law because most people, not everyone of course, so many people think OJ was innocent, but the vast majority think he was guilty and he got away with murder. That he had better lawyers than the prosecutors that were opposing him, that the judge didn't handle it well. So I would say the O.J. Simpson case, probably huge black eye for the legal system in the eyes of the public. To me, I saw good defense lawyers doing a great job in raising reasonable doubt. So I don't feel that way about the case. I feel like it was really a question about reasonable doubt, but that's not the prevailing attitude.
You know, that's a... That's terrific. Matter of fact, we had one of the defense lawyers on our show. And one of the issues, obviously, that people out there would think of is, why would he be not guilty over here and guilty over here? He was found liable in the civil case and not liable in the criminal case. And obviously, there was a little discussion about reasonable doubt as a standard here and preponderance of the evidence as a standard here. And this lawyer, who was one of the defense team of OJ, said, I think both juries got it right.
Right. And the general public doesn't understand the difference in burden of proof. It's much harder, and it should be much harder, to convict somebody of a crime than to hold them liable for a tort. And the two OJ Simpson cases, in fact, show that.
Does it bother you that television shows simplify legal issues, procedural things, and so on?
Well, you can't let yourself be bothered by that, Jim. Obviously, these are made for entertainment. Let's be clear, right? They're not documentaries. They're made to entertain and to sell products that are being advertised and to attract audiences. They have to be simplified. They have to be shortened. If someone made a movie about a real trial, it would probably take 2 weeks, and it would be so boring nobody would watch it. Court TV actually does that. They show real trials, and of course its ratings are much lower. So you have to simplify. You have to take just the best bits, the most dramatic bits. You have to. You can't possibly be technically correct on everything. But what I like in legal television are stories that are correct in their fundamentals. They're not people just acting silly. They are real problems that could really occur, and they're being treated in a genuine and fundamentally correct way, even though the details, of course, are wrong or drastically simplified.
Tom?
John Wilder was a pal of mine who wrote, it was a big producer and director, and he did Streets of San Francisco, and we're both kid lawyers. And he would write me into the shows frequently, and I would always be Judge Girardi, a stern but fair man. And I would see the script. I said, oh, God, Wilder, this is great. You know, this is so
just
terrific.
A fantasy. Huh?
Okay, well, you know, we talked just limitedly, and I want to talk about it now, The Defenders. So I grew up with Perry. Perry was winning those cases day in and day out. Then along comes E.G. Marshall and The Defenders and his son practicing with him. And sometimes they would win, Dave Dino, and sometimes they would lose. Mm-hmm. And they would lose a good percentage of the time. And this showed, I think, that the heroes, no matter how good they were, sometimes couldn't overcome the bar.
Well, The Defenders is my all-time favorite, but you have to be pretty old, like me and Tom, to be familiar with the show, because sadly it's never been syndicated and has never come out on DVD. I can't say why not. Because the quality of the show was finer than any that has ever been made before or since.
The show was considered to be not just entertaining, but at times it was considered to be controversial.
Oh, it was very controversial, but very successful. It had a big audience. It won lots of Emmys. And it was on there. Well over 100 shows were made. Mm-hmm. But it was a different concept than Perry Mason.
And what do you mean?
Well, they took a different big issue every week. The anti-communist blacklist. Women's rights, big issues, and they built a law story around them. Mm-hmm. And as Tom says, sometimes this father and son law firm didn't win every case, but they always struggled with an issue. Perhaps their greatest moment was their show about abortion. Now, this is way before Roe versus Wade, and it was no one had ever even mentioned abortion on television before. They lost all their sponsors. All the sponsors withdrew.
Whoa.
CBS, to its credit, aired the show anyway, and at the last minute they did get Philco to advertise on it for 10 cents on the dollar.
Whoa.
Really?
But they took on abortion, and they had their client was a doctor who had performed abortions and who insisted on telling his story, even though he knew he was going to be found guilty. Of course, E.G. Marshall thought that was a terrible idea, but the client insisted and, of course, was convicted. But in those 100 shows, you find 100 different issues being tackled, often way, way ahead of their time, but yet with great actors, great production values, wonderful stories. So this show, in my personal opinion, has never been topped.
How about stuff that's out there right now?
Well, you know, there's really a lot, and some of it is really good. I mentioned Law and Order and Damages, those being my current favorites. Another fine show, recently canceled, was called Raising the Bar. Another cable show about the same group of prosecutors and public defenders going at it every week. James Woods and Shark, really good prosecutor show, really enjoyable, also recently canceled, and a very successful one, Boston Legal, which involved the sort of relationship between a big liberal, Alan Shore, played by James Spader, and a big conservative, played by William Shatner, Denny Crane. And these two guys were the best of friends, although they agreed about nothing. And Alan Shore, every week, he's a true champion of justice, Tom. He went all out for every client, but he always had a bad attitude. You know, he told people off. His ethics were a little questionable. He cut a lot of corners. And yet, Alan Shore, he always delivered for his clients.
Do you have any examples of that?
Well, perhaps if we can play our clip, we'll see Alan Shore representing a borrower of a subprime mortgage who has defaulted on his mortgage.
Which would be very pertinent to today.
Extremely so.
Let's take a listen.
Nobody is more devastated about this than I am.
Yes.
I personally executed Mr. Bell's mortgage agreement. I take enormous pride in being able to help people buy homes. And I was extremely gratified to be able to help Mr. Bell buy his. And I am deeply saddened for him to be losing it.
Yes.
Is it any consolation that you're the one taking it?
I wanted this to work. We gave Mr. Bell a no-money-down, interest-only, two-year ARM at 2%. It was a fantastic opportunity.
Mr. Chernak, I'm in a bit of a rush, so if you don't mind, I'd like to cut the crap. As much as you desperately want the best for Clarence, it seems that you've done him the very worst. You facilitated his buying a house he ultimately couldn't afford. You then continued to raise his rates. What was once 2% is now 12% with the balloon payment coming due. And in the end, it seems the bank gets all the money and the house. And instead of the best, Clarence gets nothing.
I take offense to that. This man wanted this property, and I made it happen for him.
Oh, my goodness. Let's hear it for Mr. Chernak, this year's MVP in the predatory lending department.
I'm sorry. Is there a problem?
No. Don't be silly. Just celebrating Mr. Chernak's success with this subprime mortgage scam you're currently offering.
And you are?
Alan Shore, representing the scammy.
May we go to my office?
Unless you're serving drinks with your apology and refinancing offer, I think we can settle this in court.
Oh, I think before we get there, you'll want to do your discovery, which attorneys typically do. And you'll find, Mr. Shore, that this subprime debacle isn't just victimizing individuals, but lending institutions as well. In fact, over 160 major lenders have been put out of business. Many others, including us, are simply trying to survive. Our stock price has gone down almost 95%. 20% of the mortgages we hold are past due. The bulk of the others haven't had their rates reset yet. And in the next 2 years, it figures to get worse. But hey, go ahead and sue us. That's what we need for a lawyer like you to come in and slap us around a little.
I don't think you can say that there was a winner in that.
No, I don't think so. And here's the problem. A show like that seems to depict lawyers in this fashion, and the truth of the matter is that all the best lawyers wouldn't behave like that in a minute. All the best lawyers I know, and Dave Dino, I think I know most of them out there, they're totally gentle persons. They don't do any of that stuff. They're involved in the overall picture. They want a resolution. They want to do the right thing. They want fairness for their client. They want those things, and the best way to get that, of course, is to be halfway decent. And so many of the shows depict lawyers, I think, in a very bad fashion.
No doubt about it. I think today television viewers don't like characters without nuance, say a Perry Mason or the lawyers on The Defenders. I think that's pretty out of date. Or you think about Matlock or many others, television lawyers of the past. Not much nuance there. Today they want much more complex characters. And they don't want nice guys. They want lawyers with an attitude. And that's very typical of Boston Legal. Even Law & Order, if you're a loyal fan of that show, you know that it's kind of taken a turn with the guy who replaced Sam Waterston, Mike Cutter, is now the chief prosecutor. And Mike Cutter, he's not so nice, and he's not so ethical. He's a little bit different, and the show has taken a turn because I think the audience demands that. They demand it of medical shows. They demand it of all shows. They want people who seem to have an attitude and who don't mind telling off their opponents.
You are listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan, our guest today, author and UCLA professor Michael Asimov. I'm Dave Dino, and we'll be back with more right after this on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
KABC.
Hi, I'm Joan London, and if you're worried about your parent or a loved one living alone like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service. With one phone call, you'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. It's a free service, so call now.
800-391-1755. 800-391-1755.
It's Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot, where right now, select John Deere mowers come with a free Home Depot gift card worth up to $350. From zero-turn models to the new Excel cutting decks, John Deere gives you a quality cut that won't cut into your downtime. And that free Home Depot gift card puts even more spring in your pocket. Buy a John Deere, get a gift card during Spring Black Friday only at the Home Depot. More saving,
more doing.
Valid through April 19th in store and online. Gift card via mailing rebate. See store for details.
Wake up with Doug McIntyre in the morning.
I have to talk about how this one over here, Leanne Tweeden, is getting me in trouble with Jesus.
What am I doing?
You are bringing in every day a tub of glutinous, sugary, delectable joy. It's cookies one day, it's brownies the next, and today it's what?
Peanut butter fudge.
Okay, now here's the thing. It's Lent, and I gave up peanut butter for Lent.
Oh, no.
So I'm in trouble with Jesus now. Thank you. I hope you're happy.
Nobody said you had to eat them.
The devil did.
McIntyre in the morning. Now with Leanne Tweeden News. 5 to 10 on KABC.
We're back for our final segment of today's Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan. Our guest today, the author of the book Lawyers in Your Living Room, Law on Television. We're talking about the law and the influence of the media upon the public's view of lawyers, and not only through television, but also through some of the movies that have become popular. Jim?
You know, Professor, you said that the audience is demanding something new or different from lawyers today. Is that something that is cyclical? I mean, in your study of lawyers in popular culture historically, have you seen similar demands made on how lawyers are portrayed?
Well, there definitely are cycles. During the, say, the 60s and 70s, people didn't trust the police and prosecutors. And that's the era of Perry Mason and Matlock and shows of that kind. The police were always stupid and had the wrong guy. The prosecutors were wrong and the defense lawyers were heroes. But today, you don't see that. Today, people like the police, they like prosecutors, and they don't like criminal defense lawyers for the most part. So the cycle that you see is kind of the law and order cycle, using it not as a television show, but as a cultural attitude. How do you feel about the police? Are they a bunch of bumpkins, or are they protectors that we really like and rely upon? And as those attitudes in the public change, then television movies will change to reflect that different attitude. But I think the attitude of meanness and incivility, which I see everywhere in our society today, I see it in talk shows, in politics, this idea that you need to be nasty and have an attitude definitely colors the current television shows as well, because that's what the audience seems to like.
Do you think that the current popularity of legal shows on TV has contributed to the increased amount of people that are going to law school?
The answer is yes. We saw that absolutely in the era of L.A. Law, one of the most successful lawyer television shows of all time.
L.A. Law was chosen. Mentioned. It was chosen number one by the lawyers as their favorite TV show, and it really kind of resurrected the law show, because for a little while there before that, they had sort of gone away.
That's right. They did resurrect the law show, and all the shows you see today pretty much are descended from the L.A. Law model. That taught us that law is practiced in law firms, not alone, and that law is a business. You're in it for the money, and it's got to be profitable. But it did glamorize the life of the big firm lawyers very, very much. It made it seem like every case was interesting and fascinating. You could make a huge amount of money real fast and have lots of fun, have lots of sexual partners. It just was just great. And it triggered a boom in law school applications. That was my answer to Dave's question. Absolutely. L.A. Law brought all these people out of the woods to apply to law school because it was such a great lifestyle, so wrongly and falsely portrayed on L.A. Law.
You know, not many people make Tom blush, but you just did.
That was pretty good, and I appreciated the interference, because that was pretty good.
So it's a good example of how lawyers, as well as the general public, actually learns what they know or think they know about law and lawyers.
But knowing this, if I'm going to go down there and try a case in front of a jury, knowing that maybe this is what they're used to, is that what I have to do to get them to go along with me?
You have to be aware of what they have learned from television. Prosecutors today will tell you there's a huge CSI effect out there, that jurors have seen so many forensic shows that they believe you can't establish reasonable doubt without forensic evidence. That's it. It's required.
Wow.
Well, that's not true, actually, in most cases. Their forensic evidence is expensive to develop and is not needed. But that's what jurors think, and prosecutors need to know that to counter it in their arguments to the jury. So, yes, you'd better be aware of all of this information that people are carrying with them in their heads when they go into that courtroom to be jurors.
You're listening to Champions of Justice. Your hosts are Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan, and our guest today, author and UCLA professor Michael Asimo. We're talking primarily about the book Lawyers in Your Living Room. Tom?
How'd you get this way? Now, you went to law school, I went to law school, and now you took this path. And I know you're a professor, you're a real smart guy. I know a bunch of your students. I know your reputation. But this truly was going off in a different direction. How did you get this way?
Well, I kind of, as I always loved old movies and television, I kind of lucked into a project writing a book about courtroom movies. My colleague, Paul Bergman, thought of the idea. And since then, I've written numerous articles, taught lots of classes, wrote this new book on television, because I think pop culture, I mean, I really like pop culture, for one thing, but it's really important for the reason I mentioned a minute ago. It's teaching people what law and lawyers are like, which very, very big effects. And it reflects also what the general public thinks about law and lawyers. In law school, there's plenty of people who teach law and literature. They're teaching Shakespeare and Dickens and so on. And I chose to teach about pop culture. And, of course, the law students all love it because they have spent their lives consuming pop culture, too.
What courses have you taught?
Well, I've taught everything over the years. I now teach contract law and administrative law. It's kind of my main field.
That's a far cry from what we're talking about and the
That's
law
it is.
And media.
How much sex is there in contract law?
Oh, there's quite
offer,
a lot.
Offer acceptance.
Oh, no, no.
Consideration.
We've got a story here.
We get lots of sex into that course. I mean, we talk about, say, the Marvin case in California and contracts between cohabitants. We talk about surrogacy contracts. We talk about all kinds of things. I obviously like to get as much sex into the room as I can, but there's plenty there.
And do you continue to look at every law show that's out there?
Well, I sure try. I feel like I have a professional need to see these shows. Fortunately, my wife likes them too, or else I'd have a big problem at home. But yes, I try to watch them all. Not every episode, because some of them I really don't care for. Mm-hmm. I'm not at all a fan of Judge Judy and the numerous daytime judge shows. Judge Judy has about 10 clones, so you can watch those shows all day long. And I have done that. I have watched them all because I wanted to write about them. But that creates a model of judging which is so false and so wrong in depicting what judges do. There's a study I'm familiar with in which the person studied those who watch Judge Judy and those who don't. And those who watched Judge Judy had completely wrong impressions about what judges do, like who asked the questions at the trial. Well, the judge does, of course. But in fact, the people who don't watch Judge Judy said, no, actually, the attorneys ask the questions. And they were full of wrong information. Judge Judy belittles the people before her. She humiliates them. She makes up the law as she goes along. And to my personal opinion, and I'm sure many of your viewers disagree with me because she's the single most popular show on daytime television, I myself don't like it.
It all began with Judge Wapner.
It began with Judge Wapner, who couldn't have been more different.
Oh, no. He was a sweet man.
He was a gentle guy. He tried to follow the law. He tried to explain the law. He was always courteous and kind to the people who appeared before him. I was on a panel with Wapner some years ago, and he hates Judge Judy
because
of what she did to the genre.
I tried several cases before the real Judge Wapner, without a doubt. One of the cases, he said to the other side, he said, could I speak to Mr. Girardi just for a minute privately? And the other side said, sure, Judge, that's fine. So I went up to the bench, and he turned to me, and he says, hey, Tom, this is a real bad case. I think you ought to get out of here.
That one got settled real quick.
Oh, yeah, right, it got settled real quick, right. And that was Judge Wapner. And then when he retired from the bench to go on to the show, everybody thought, wow, what's he going to do, you know, on a TV show as a judge? But it was really cool, I thought.
And you know, you'll be happy to know that he actually made a comeback recently on the Animal Planet channel as the judge on Animal Court, hearing all dog bite cases. He just loved being a television judge.
Jim, we want to give you a chance before the show ends to get a last word in here.
Where do you see law and television going?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because so many shows have failed, like the big firm model shows. really difficult to make. They've made shows in which the protagonist was a Supreme Court judge. Those failed. Because what judges do is just not interesting enough. In England, though, there's a very popular show discussed in our book now in which the protagonist is a judge, but he's a super aggressive one. He's fighting with the government all the time. He's really struggling for justice out there, and he cuts lots of corners, and he has a not-so-nice personal life. And so they've succeeded in actually creating a judge character who's really interesting to the audience. And I think that's a great model. We had a judge show here, Judging Amy, that actually did quite well. So it shows you can make a show about a judge and make it fun and interesting. So I would suggest to producers that they take a look at the English show, Judge John Deed, and see if they can make something like that here. I think it could work.
Tom?
Do you think lawyers are impacted negatively by television?
Well, very much by movies, particularly. In the movies, just about every lawyer you see is horrible. I mean, I'm thinking of Michael Clayton, for example, a recent movie, very well-made movie, starring George Clooney, in which every lawyer was each one more disgusting than the other. On television, the lawyers are pretty negative on the whole. And since people, my point here, my fundamental point is that we are always affected by the popular culture we consume, every one of us. And, of course, the less you know about law and lawyers, the more affected you are because you don't have personal knowledge to counteract it. And when lawyers are shown in a deeply negative way as unethical, crooked, disgusting, sleazy in their personal lives, then that's what the public believes. So I think, on the whole, lawyers are negatively affected by television and even more so by movies.
You know, lawyers were always depicted generally up to a certain period of time as very positive. And then the mood changed
very much
with respect to films.
Around 1980, the mood changed totally. And starting with pictures like The Verdict, Devil's Advocate, and a number of others in the 80s and 90s, I've tried to see them all. And in the movies, I'd say about two-thirds of the lawyers now are very negative portrayals. But before that, two-thirds were very positive portrayals. So there was a big change, and it reflects what was happening at the same time. At the same time, lawyers really fell off the cliff, and a respected profession became hated and distrusted. And that's reflected in the media, which is no surprise.
I suppose the first time is when the lawyer was telling his client to pretend he was still in the wheelchair.
Yes, that's the fortune cookie.
Exactly. No, it was
with Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau.
Exactly.
That was kind of ahead of its time. That's, I think, from the early 70s.
See, that was the first time, though, that lawyers then were looked at as being a co-participant in very criminal behavior, right?
There always have been mob lawyers and things like that. And
right.
You can find them back in the film noir days. But I agree with you that the fortune cookie, which is, as I recall, in the early 70s, very, very negative about lawyers. But it was still an outlier. But starting around the late 70s and the early 80s, the verdict with Paul Newman being a really important early example of this, you see lawyers being portrayed as sleazy, unethical, unprofessional, and terrible people.
Okay, you're going to come back here in 2 years. We're going to this date in 2 years. You're still going to be at UCLA. Tell us what has happened to movies and the law in the past 2 years.
Oh, I see more and more sleazy, disgusting lawyers in the movies.
You do?
More and more lawyers on television with bad attitudes. Yeah, that's what sells right now.
Hey, well, you know what? You have a lot to do. It was really nice of you to come. I appreciate it very much. And Lawyers in Your Living Room is a book, honest to goodness, that you should get. I'm not kidding you on this one.
You've been listening to Champions of Justice with Tom Girardi and Jim O'Callaghan, our guest today, author and UCLA professor Michael Asimov. And usually at the end of the program, we try to come up with some sort of a witty saying or a quote. But you know what? It occurred to me as we were getting ready for the show that nothing that we could come up with would be even close to what you have just had the opportunity to listen to. You know from what you have heard about our guest's passion for the law and his passion for how it is portrayed in the media. You've heard this, and that indeed is what makes him a champion of justice. Thank you for joining us.